This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. This week, I am so excited because I haven't spoken to this guest in quite a while. I have back on with us Mr. Wajahat Ali. Hey, Waj.
Hi, this is the Jin podcast, right?
This is not, no, I'm sorry. You're getting confused.
Oh, my bad.
Thanks for the plug, though. I appreciate that.
I thought we'd be finished with Trump and move on to Jins, but we have...
Listen, I have told Susan, I don't care what happens after November 3rd, I am not doing this podcast anymore. Because here's the thing, if he loses, of course, we don't have to do it. If he wins, I can't, like, I can't do it. I cannot do four more years of this.
All of us, our brains will just break. Yeah. And then we'll just enter the upside down. And then it's just going to be like Mad Max Fury Road. Everyone's going to be for themselves. That's it.
It's, yeah, there's no way. So I hope our listeners enjoy these last few episodes that I'll be on at least. But anyway, listen, I don't think I've spoken to you the entire time during this pandemic. Maybe you were on with Susan before, but I don't think we've been on together in a while.
No, we haven't. You guys became too cool for school. And then you moved on to better guests.
That's not true.
I always joke with people. I'm like the Tony Randall of podcasts. Like Tony Randall used to be the go-to guy for Johnny Carson. Anytime like a guest would bail, he would have Tony Randall just like sitting there in a glass jar. And then they were like, Tony, what are you doing? He goes, nothing. And then you already be in the suit and he jump on the couch. So once you guys got big.
That's an actual lie, because the truth is you've gotten too cool for us. You are now regularly appearing on the Mehdi Hassan show on Peacock. I've seen you there like two or three times already. So congratulations on that.
That's when you've made it. When you appear on Peacock, you can strut.
Yes, man.
But I feel like, you know, it's one of those, you know, thinking about just what you were talking about, the country and like the election. Isn't it amazing that you and I don't drink alcohol?
It's amazing. Well, you know, look, listen, it is. But here's the thing. I just tweeted this today because I actually thought this through. I made a conscious decision. I mean, for months now, I've been like, okay, low sugar, no carb. I've been like trying just to, you know. And today I decided, F it. Between now and the election, I'm just going to eat and drink whatever I want within our religious restrictions because I just can't. So carbs, sugar, processed food, it is all going into my body.
Because
yeah,
people don't know, Robbie is actually serious. And I remember like we're in several like groups, and one of them, you're like, me and my husband are not drinking, eating sugar. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're a psychopath. Yeah. And how do you survive? And then I said, I refuse. Like, we don't drink. We don't do drugs. I don't smoke weed. I don't smoke. I've been in lockdown. If you deprive me of like sugar, I'll kill people or kill myself.
It's so like the only drug we have.
Yeah. So the fact that you are actually indulging, I think you should. I really do. I think it's like people need to take care of themselves and be prepared for the long haul, because I know everyone's waiting for election day, which is less than a week away. But I keep telling people this is going to go till January 20th. That's inauguration day.
You know, the thing is, I think the next 3 months are going to be the worst, some of the worst months in this country's history, at least when we think about the democratic process. But I also think it's not going to go away after January 20th. I mean, because I am looking down the road. I'm seeing Don Jr. I'm seeing Ivanka. I'm seeing Trumpism. I'm seeing an ideology that I just think it's like this genie out of a bottle, right? I don't think it's, yeah.
Okay. I agree. No, I agree. So I completely agree with the that point. The Trumpism is the natural consequence of what the Republicans have been building up since the Southern strategy, right? And you're right. The genie is out of the bottle. And as I've said on your podcast before, the fact that they're more threatened, instead of moderating, we have seen that they are doubling down on the extreme. So we're going to be dealing with an extremist minority party that is outrightly hostile to democracy. And that's about a third of this country, which is in its own ecosystem with its own information loop, where QAnon, I don't know if you guys read this last week, because there's like 85 different flavors of asteroids hitting this earth. But the Republican Party, apparently in a consultation, said that they're not going to disavow QAnon. They're going to embrace it because it, quote unquote, helps.
What?
Them. Yeah.
No, I missed that.
It was kind of like a wink, wink. All right. Because the base is so immersed in it and it's become so mainstream within their base that now a domestic terror threat, which literally believes that you and me are part of an international cabal that not only traffics children, but we also eat them.
We eat them, yes.
And I wonder if that children are halal. I have to check Islamic fiqh. But you know, this is where we're at, and I think you're absolutely correct. But I do feel when it comes to the immediate transfer of power, they're gonna do everything they possibly can until January 20th. So we just have to hold on to our butts and be patient and guide this entire process through, because we're so close. And we are very close, I think, inshallah, as we say, God willing, to get rid of this administration.
We are less than 7 days away from the election, and we're going to wrap up today's episode by talking about what's going on in the campaign and stuff. But I'm going to start now with where we have been starting for, I don't know, it feels like forever, and I can't wait till we don't have to do this anymore, but talking about COVID. So we are at 8.78 million cases, positive cases this morning, 226,752 dead. You know, when I wrote that statistic this morning, I did like 226K. And then I said, what am I doing? These are human lives. So I went back and I put in the full number, because every one of those numbers is a human being that has families, loved ones, and lived a life. And what we are seeing now is we are basically hitting in the last few weeks record numbers of COVID cases. Like, we are blowing through the highest numbers that we had back in like April, March, June, July, whatever, 70,000, 75,000 cases a day. Apparently in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a 46% spike in hospitalized patients. And, you know, this is a lie that Trump says over and over, where he goes to his rallies and he said, we just have more numbers because of more testing, but, you know, they don't talk about deaths and hospitalizations. That's not true. The hospitals now in many different states and cities are really burdened with these spikes in COVID cases.
And it's going to get worse, unfortunately, because the winter's coming. And the United States is incapable of controlling this coronavirus because of failed leadership and because we're an insane country. With the weather in certain parts of America where there is like a Trump heavy Trump base, they can't go outside. So you're going to have more people meeting inside, celebrating inside, partying inside, doing Thanksgiving inside, doing Christmas inside, and it's going to be super spreader events all across the nation.
I mean, Trump continues the super spreader events, but right now, 26 states, that's more than half the states in the country, are at or near record numbers. And there are zero states that are seeing any decline in case numbers. So every single state is experiencing some kind of jump. Now, you talked about how right now, because of bad leadership, they have decided, and we had who was on Jake Tapper, Mark Meadows was on Jake Tapper not too long ago, and he said, we're not controlling the pandemic anymore. We're just not doing it anymore.
That was Sunday. Yeah, that was just a few days ago. That should have been much bigger news. I know we the press covered it, but that should be like leading news every day. The fact that the White House has openly admitted to the world, we are not going to control the virus.
Yeah. He said, we are not going to control the pandemic. We're going to control the fact that we get vaccines, therapeutics, and other mitigating areas, he said on the State of the Union.
But Rabia, for our listeners, can I just connect the dots real quick what that means?
Sure.
Because let's not forget what Trump kind of tipped his hat and admitted a few weeks ago was that I'm looking for herd mentality. And he meant, you know, herd immunity.
Right.
And they gave up pretty much last month. And so if you connect the dots, what does that mean? The science, if it's in our favor, says that if, and this is a huge if, ladies and gentlemen, if America receives herd mentality, herd immunity, that means if we're lucky, anywhere from 4 to 8 million will die if we achieve it. If we don't achieve it, more people will die. So what basically the White House is telling us is that they are willing to sacrifice low number, 4 million, most likely 8 million of our fellow Americans to the pandemic just so they can get, quote unquote, the country reopened. This is the pro-life party. Yeah. And the question I want to ask people is, okay, if you're fine with that, then who's the 8 million? Who gets to be the tribute?
Right. But the other thing is this, though. We don't even know if you can reach herd immunity with this virus. I mean, people are getting reinfected. People are getting reinfected. I mean, so, but beyond, okay, there's been just some mind-boggling news coming out about COVID. First of all, just today it was reported that, you know, how Bob Woodward, in the course of researching for his book, had many, many interviews with lots of officials and Trump himself. And today, I think, some news agency got a hold of two videotapes of Kushner saying back in April to Bob Woodward that Trump, he was really happy. He was proud that Trump had cut out the doctors and scientists advising him on the pandemic, saying that he took the country back from the doctors. It's only about politics for this guy. It's only about votes. I still don't understand why he thinks, because the rate of cases and hospitalization is actually higher in red states. I don't think he's doing his own voters any favors by basically failing to act and just doing nothing. But at the same time, you must have seen this. Just yesterday, the White House released a statement that was supposed to be like, these are all the things that Trump has achieved in science and technology. And he said that one of the things that they considered an achievement is that he ended the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, straight up 1984 level propaganda. It was kind of stunning. I read it again today. I'm like, no, he couldn't have done that. And I saw it was like a reputable news service and I saw it confirmed and then I read it. And I'm like, yep, of course he did. Yeah. This is the same guy. Let's not forget. I mean, I remember I was on CNN 2016, right after the inauguration. That would be 2017, excuse me. And Sean Spicer, who was then the first White House press secretary, comes out. And if you guys remember, take it back almost 4 years. What was the first official act of the press secretary? He comes out to the podium and he literally lies to our faces and says that the crowd was the biggest crowd that had ever assembled, even though we saw with our own faces, the photos, the numbers, that it wasn't. And he maintained that lie because he had an audience of one, Donald Trump. And so that same administration is now coming out, the same administration that says, don't believe in facts, believe in alternative facts, is telling us that this pandemic with the stunning numbers that you start off this podcast with, over 226,000 dead by the time this podcast comes out, it's most likely going to be 229,000, I'm thinking, right? Or 228,000. Right. That he has miraculously controlled it and done away with it. And also, by the way, Rabia, did you know that Donald Trump is immune to coronavirus?
You know, he says he is. And actually, I want right now for our listeners to hear a clip of him just saying this from the other day.
We have things that we didn't even know about, think about 6 months ago. And I don't know if it was the strength of me. I'd like to give me full credit. I don't want to give the drug. I was telling somebody the other day, I don't want to give the drug any credit. I want to say, because I am a very young person that's in perfect physical shape, I took that virus, and I woke up the next morning, and I felt like Superman. It's true. I wanted to get out of there. I said, doctors, get me the hell out of there. Get me out. But it's true. No, great doctors. But we know things that we didn't know. We didn't know. We had no idea about much of the stuff. And you see mortality rate. You see where that is now. And people go in. You get better. They say you have immunity, that you can go in. I could jump. See this crowd right here? I could jump right in. I could give every woman and every man. I'd even kiss the men. I could give every woman and every man right here a kiss and I wouldn't catch it. I have immunity. And until I came along, you know, you used to hear you have immunity for life, right? As soon as I had it and got better, they were not too happy about that. And they said, the speed, this guy got better. But you know what? As soon as I had it, I got better. I said I had immunity. It was supposed to be for life. When it was me, they said it's only good for 4 months, okay? Okay. Anybody else, it's for life. With Trump, they said it's 4 months. So they brought it down now, immunity from life to 4 months. And you know, now with them, you can't watch anything else. Turn on COVID, 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 COVID. Well, we have a spike in cases. You ever notice they don't use the word death? They use the word cases, cases. Like Barron Trump is a case. He has sniffles. He was sniffling. One Kleenex, that's all he needed. One, that was it. And he was better. But he's a case. Okay, he's a case, Barron Trump, young people cases. And you know why we have so many cases? Because we test more. So we go around, and they're by the way, we're testing very young people too. We're testing people in school. We're testing everybody. In many ways, I hate it. In many ways, I hate it. We test everybody. And because of that, now if I tested half, if I said, we are going to cut our testing down in half, they'd go crazy. Because the cases would go down in approximately half, right? And then we're going to cut it down in half once again. And there are other countries that don't do testing, and they show very few cases. I mean, it's a very simple thing. But overall, it's good to have the testing. We find out where it is, and there are a lot of things. But they use it to make us look bad. But here's the story. It's COVID, COVID, COVID. You can't watch anything else. On November 4th, you won't be hearing so much about it. Okay? November 4th. On November 4th, you'll hear, it's getting better. It's getting better. You watch. No, no, they're doing heavy COVID because they want to scare people. And people get it. I'll tell you, they understand these people better than you are smarter than most of the political people in this world. You get it.
So we are currently in Michigan, which I have now learned is the land that cannot make up its mind whatsoever about weather.
It's every season at once.
Twice a day. It's super annoying. For real.
My body is hot, but my like hands appear cold.
I warned you before you got here. Like, how should I pack? I'm like, pack everything because it's going to be at 5 million temperatures. Anyway, this is what Ember Wave was made for.
Yep. Ember Wave is the first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. It's kind of amazing. It's like your own little personal body temperature device.
And here in Michigan, in the fall, you're going to need both.
Yep. Ember Lab's mission is to bring thermal wellness to the world. They're passionate about using temperature to help every person feel better physically and emotionally.
Ember Wave provides comfort in unpredictable climates and relief from stress and support for sleep. At the end of a long day, driving around talking to witnesses like we're doing now, Ember Wave gives you the comfort you need to sleep no matter what temperature is going to be.
Look, sometimes we're in spaces like with other people who have totally different body
temperatures. Oh my God. That one room like, that was 5 million degrees.
You're right.
Oh my God.
That or my husband. I'm talking to you. And you need to have like your own kind of temperature control. But you know what? The other thing, Susan, is I actually feel this all the time. I will feel warm except my feet will be freezing.
Oh, that's always been my life.
Yeah. Or my hands will be cold. Yeah. So you take the Ember Wave. It's a bracelet. I have put it around my ankle, by the way. I have put it around my wrist and it has regulated my temperature like beautifully.
And right now, Ember Wave is offering our listeners $50 off your purchase when you go to emberwave.com/45th. That's emberwave.com/45th.
It's like, you know when he says, you said that Kushner said he took the country back from the doctors? It's like literally like someone saying, hey man, I took the airplane away from the pilots. We're in control now. Like, have you ever flown a plane before? No, bro. I just go on my gut instinct. I'm like, okay, I feel safe.
You know, I mean, the thing about this, I mean, you're right. I didn't really draw that line from that very first act of Sean Spicer's. I mean, because I remember that was, it kind of took our breath away because we expected knowing him some falsehoods and fudging, but outright, like just, you know, Orwellian type of lies we didn't expect. And that's what we're getting here. And I wonder, because this is actually the first time I've seen, I know this is the very, very first time we've seen any kind of such statement that he's ended the pandemic. Nobody's ever heard this before. I'm wondering, I mean, it's kind of late in the game. It's a few days before the election. Is this like the new thing he's going to start saying, like this in the next few days, thinking this is the boost he needs to win this election, just starting to completely lie and saying the pandemic's over? I don't know. What is the strategy here, right?
Well, there's no strategy. The strategy actually, I was reading a report yesterday that said that Donald Trump's rallies are actually hurting him with his base. Instead of rallying them up, he keeps saying this outlandish stuff and it's just turning people off precisely because of the reality of that we're living in a pandemic and now a recession. So you kind of want him to go and rally his base and spread the coronavirus, actually, you know, and hopefully people don't get the coronavirus at the super spreader events, right? But like, you want him to go and just be so stupid and do these stupid things, because then the rest of the country, including a lot of conservatives and Republicans, you know, people who have been sick and people have lost lives and people who want to, like, you know, normalcy, they look at him and they go, what are you doing, bro? Like, why are you holding a super spreader event? Why are you saying these stupid things? Why is Jared Kushner... why does he think it's a brilliant idea a week before the election to mock black people? Like, you know, like the great advisor.
Oh, that's right. That just happened like yesterday. I forgot about that.
Remember that Tuesday? He just goes and like calls black people lazy and tells them to kind of pull themselves up from their bootstraps and stop whining. I'm like, that's a brilliant strategy to win over black voters, even though you're losing. Yeah. And so these people aren't that smart. They're corrupt. They're selfish. They're narcissistic. And this is the problem when you surround yourselves with yes men who feed you, who reaffirm your lies. It's like the emperor has no clothes.
He is hurting because of his rallies and also because he keeps going into these states where people are really hurting. I mean, they're not just hurting because of the virus. People have lost jobs. Evictions have begun. Foreclosures are beginning. There's no more like financial relief in sight, you know, that whatever $3 trillion package, nothing's happening there. And not that there was so much anyways. I mean, there was like limited help with the $1,200 and then, you know, the unemployment, the extra money in unemployment, which not everybody qualified for anyways. People are really hurting. Then he goes out there, and I think it was just last week, he goes out there and he's like, ah, you know, people, the news is talking about floods in Iowa and this in Iowa. What about my Nobel nomination? He's saying this to Iowans who are like, what?
That's what you get when you have a narcissist as president who literally is incapable of thinking about anyone himself. And I remember on your podcast, and I've been saying this for 4 years, they've always asked me, what will make Trump's base turn, right? And all I kept saying the same thing. I said, only when they experience immense personal pain will some of them turn on him. Now, when I said that, I thought it would be a recession. And I thought he would bungle the economy bad enough that people, his base, especially people in Iowa, the farmers, right, with this failed trade war, they would really start hurting in the summer leading up to the election. I never anticipated a pandemic.
Right.
And now you literally have not immense personal pain, you have death. Americans are dying, and unfortunately, we're really going to die in the next 3 months. I hope I'm wrong. I hope this statement I just said is proven incorrect, but all the data shows that we're going to be expecting almost like 500,000 deaths, right, in a couple of months. And so after a while, some people like living. And the seniors, for example, in Florida, who were all for Trump, they're like, you know, you guys are literally making us canaries in the coal mine. I don't want to die. I want to live another 5-10 years. And so I think, number one, that's why we see the turn. But number two, what's also fascinating about this insane country we live in is that 40 to 42% of voters are still like, that Trump, yeah, he's my guy. He'll save me.
You know, I didn't look up the numbers on this, but this is what I'm thinking. If over 226,000 Americans have died, that's like a fraction of the number who have gotten sick, a fraction of the number who have actually been hospitalized and recovered. But I cannot imagine that there's any American right now who does not know at least one person who got the virus, who got quite sick from the virus or died from the virus. And he's out there saying COVID, 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 basically making fun mocking that this virus is even a problem. I mean, like, He's mocking the people who have lost people from the virus. He's mocking the people who have died from the virus, almost like saying, hey, I could beat it, but you losers can't. All right, so I do want to talk a little bit about... So basically, everybody's on their own. The government has, like, said...
You are on your own.
Yeah.
Pray to God or whatever gods you believe in. We're not going to help you. Mm-hmm. And when we had the opportunity to pass a relief bill... while more Americans are losing their job and being kicked off of insurance, while this pandemic is being is through its third surge, we're not going to do anything. Unlike other countries who have actually taken a robust approach towards using their resources to, you know, give people these resources to survive during the lockdown. Instead, the Republican-led Senate is going to blame the Democrats and not pass the House bill. But you know what they're going to do during a pandemic? They're going to bum rush Judge Amy Coney Barrett. And it just shows you the priorities. We don't care about the 226,000 dead. We don't care about the recession. We don't care about the workers. We don't care about healthcare. But we do care about our conservative judge. And we'll get together and bum rush her and confirm her. But that aid package, that'll wait.
Yeah. So Amy Barrett was sworn in a ceremony, what was it, Monday night or something. And then, she appeared at the White House. She appeared on a balcony with Trump. I mean, it was completely politicized. She didn't even try to, like, separate herself from this president, like, from the jump, okay? I don't have a whole lot to say about the confirmation other than we saw it coming, it was going to happen, and it has happened. Of course, she is probably going to play a role in how this election is eventually adjudicated because... unless Trump actually wins on November 3rd, like really, he actually gets the votes and it looks like he's going to win, they're going to contest everything. But I also want to talk about which this very shocking ruling that came down from Supreme Court this past week on a case out of Wisconsin. Yeah. Now, there's a 5-3 Supreme Court ruling that absentee ballots in Wisconsin must be received by Election Day or else they won't be counted. Now, voting rights advocates and Democrats, of course, have said that this is not how it should operate. The way it should operate is that those ballots should be, meaning like stamped, like, you know, like people put them in the mail. They have a time, they have a stamp on them the day the mail carriers get them. And that's the day, like the deadline should not be that they receive them by that day, because we know, the mail is slow. It takes time to open all the ballots, all these things. However, So the Supreme Court ruled 5-3. And so there's an opinion, there's a majority opinion issue, but Kavanaugh decides, I'm going to write a separate opinion, a concurring opinion, which he really didn't need to, but it reminds me of what you said about Sean Spicer, his audience of one. This opinion was written just for Trump, really, in many ways.
And it's so stupid. I mean, let's not forget that you and I are both, well, I'm a recovering attorney.
Yeah.
But did you read it just as an attorney? You're like, what? It just... Continue. Sorry, I just have to say that.
You're right.
It's so dumb.
Yeah. And here's the thing. We have to remember that Kavanaugh was part of the legal team on Bush's side during Bush v. Gore, arguing that we should count all those ballots that came in, you know, no matter how long and late after the election they arrived, if they were if they had been mailed in time. And now he's done a complete 180 on this. A lot of legal scholars are looking at this opinion like, what is this bullshit? So a couple of things that were noted in this is, let me see if I can find it. Oh, one of the things he said, and this is one of the things I think that shocked people the most, is this. He said, quote, late arriving ballots could prevent states from, I guess it's definitely announcing the results of the election on election night, which is something that never happens. That doesn't even happen. States never announce the results. I mean, media, you have media projections on the night. And Wajahat, were you doing any of these media around in 2016, like an election night?
I was at the Javits Center covering the elections for the Huffington Post. And Javits Center was the Democratic headquarters on election night. And everyone was expecting Clinton to win. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you're there with everyone, right?
Yeah.
And I remember I saw Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
From Florida, who at the time was the chair, and she then since resigned. I remember around 6 p.m., I saw her sobbing in the hallway, and she was quickly like escorted away.
Oh,
and
man.
This was like before the red state, the Rust Belt came in, and that's when I knew Clinton lost.
Yeah,
but I mean, at the same time, to your point, it's projection, right? You projected win, which right. which goes back to 2000, right? Because it was so close in Florida that initially. If you remember, for those, I don't want to trigger the old people here like me, but initially they called Florida for Al Gore.
Right.
And it went Gore. But then they're like, wait, 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 it's too close to call. And then the stupid hanging Chad ballots. And then all of a sudden you did a recount. And then with the recount, Bush wins by 537 votes. Mm. It goes to the Supreme Court, 5-4, epic decision. Conservatives on the bench gave it to Bush and said, no, we're stopping the recount. And voila, 8 years of chaos.
So this concurring opinion was written by Kavanaugh to assure Trump that, listen, I got your back. He knows this is going to be litigated up. I mean, the only way, this is what I wonder what's going to happen. And of course, actually, we know what's going to happen. Let's say on election night, Biden is projected everywhere. And if Trump is saying, well, whatever is called in the media should be it, right? Then how are they going to backtrack from this? I mean, they will.
But
they shouldn't be able to backtrack. Yeah.
See, my thing is this. I think it doesn't matter. It just goes to show you with the confirmation of Judge Barrett, it's sheer naked cynical politics. They backtracked on their own standard that they used to deny Barack Obama a confirmation hearing on Merrick Garland. And I think the irony here would be like if literally they count the ballots and seal it off and say, okay, we're only going to accept the ballots that come up till midnight or 11:59 p.m. November 3rd, and it just shows Trump getting devastated. Trump's going to be like, excuse me, you have to count all the
every ballot.
And then Kavanaugh's going to come and be like, I'm dumb, beer. And he'll vote for whatever Trump tells him to vote for. And I think the problem here is this, also you have to connect the dots, is why was DeJoy put as the Postmaster General? Why have they been slowing the mail for the last 2 months? Why have they been deliberately attacking absentee ballots? Because they realized, they gamed out, that perhaps the only way Trump will win is if they crush the absentee ballots, which are right now to this day leaning heavily towards Biden. And if they get their base to come out, and then also, let's not forget, Donald Trump admitted publicly that he is nominating Judge Barrett to give him the swing 6-3 vote.
He said it out loud.
Come up to the Supreme Court. How do we know? He admitted it. He's a terrible villain. He's a terrible James Bond villain. He tells you the entire plot. He told us. He literally told us. And so here comes Kavanaugh with the very little equity he has left and just completely shits on his own reputation with this concurring opinion.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care. I mean, and you know, the thing is that I actually think that not only will Biden sweep, you know, I mean, he's so way ahead in polls right now. Of course, we know we've been stung by polls before, but I think even all the absentee voting is going to favor Biden. And in that case, what Trump is going to resort to is saying there's election fraud, that there are ballots that were cast that are not legitimate ballots, or there was some kind of foreign interference. It'll be just something else. But I don't know if that is really going to help them one way or the other. But we know the Supreme Court is lined up to help him if they can.
But I think, you know what, Robbie, just if you connect the dots, of course he's going to do that. Before the 2016 election, 2 weeks out, people forget this. All the projections were that he was going to lose. And on election night, he thought he was going to lose because no one was more surprised. And he said, without any evidence, it's rigged. It's rigged because he's such a coward that he wanted to save face. In 2018 midterm elections, what did he say? He said that the Democrats are rigging Florida, which was a stunning statement that no one remembers. But that's what he said, right? Without any proof whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, if he loses, which he is going to lose, in my opinion, he is going to try to litigate this. I hope the Supreme Court doesn't touch it. I don't think they will. That's my guess. I don't think they will, because I think they realize if they touch this and give it to Trump, I think this country's going to burn.
You have more, I guess, I don't know, hope in the Supreme Court than I do at this point. All right, so I want to talk about a couple other news stories, and then we'll circle back to the election stuff because that's really what's on everybody's mind. But other things are happening. And yeah, these are some news stories that I thought were interesting. And, you know, the New York Times has gotten a hold of all these federal income tax records, and they're just kind of like giving us piecemeal little things here and there. One of the stories that came out this week is that apparently Trump has been forgiven $287 million in loans that he failed to repay. This story kind of blew my mind because it's about like this project in Chicago that he began in 2008, like, you know, another sky rise with condos and commercial space and stuff like that. He got lots of loans from lots of different people. And then he starts defaulting on these loans. And when the bank comes after him, because the bank like gave him a couple of extensions and they're like, that's enough, Trump sues the bank. He sues Deutsche Bank, and he says, and other banks, and he says that Deutsche Bank engaged in predatory lending practices against Trump. That they gave him, you know, I mean, we know what predatory lending practices, what they generally are, right? It's when people who really can't afford certain kinds of loans with high interest rates are given those loans from lenders knowing that they're going to be able to, you know, take their property back.
That was the 2008 economic crisis, the subprime mortgage loans, right?
Exactly. And he sought $3 billion in damages. And after he sued them, basically the lender's like, okay, we're just going to write these loans off. $287 million. This guy got written off. But what happened was when you do that, it's supposed to be shown as income. And so now the New York Attorney General is taking a look at this because he should have paid taxes on that as income. And of course, he did not. Let's see what happens on that. Another story that I thought was horrifying this week, but we know that he's been doing this from the beginning, is that the government, Trump, obviously, one of his biggest grifts is that he has been he's made sure that the U.S. government and taxpayers are now patrons to his businesses, right? He forces meetings, official meetings to happen at Mar-a-Lago or other of his venues and stuff. Then he charges taxpayers for it. He charges his campaign for it. He charges donors for these things. Oh, my goodness.
Basically, he charges us. We are paying Donald Trump to hold official presidential business at his private resorts. And he makes money off of us because we are all suckers in his grift. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Listen to this list. Since 2017, Trump's company has charged taxpayers for hotel rooms, ballrooms, cottages, rental houses, golf carts, votive candles, floating candles, candelabras, furniture moving, resort fees, decorative palm trees, steak, chocolate cake, breakfast buffets, $1,000 worth of liquor for White House aides, Trump companies even charged the government for water that was not even drunk by him and the premier of Japan, Shinzo Abe, when they met alone, $3. They charged him $3 each for water. They charged us $3 each for those the water.
It's the best water. It's the water that makes you a very stable genius and it will give you success.
The government, meaning us, we have paid $2.5 million to Trump's businesses. And beyond that, another $6 million has come in from other people who are using spaces like campaigns and donors and this and that. I mean, I don't know.
You got to give him credit. He's a con man. He's a BS artist. He sold a lie. His base loves it. His base loves him because they see him as their wrecking ball, their avatar, the man who will go and attack all their enemies, the one who will somehow make them great again, right? It's all BS. It's all manufactured. He's a TV caricature. He was created. And he sold this myth for 30 years. America bought it. You know, the art of the deal. Can you imagine that? The art of the deal by a man.
Did we really buy it? I always thought of him as a laughingstock. I thought he was a buffoon. I mean, in the
New York circles, he was. But yeah. Also, never forget the power of the image, right? I always want to remind people, 1992, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, Macaulay Culkin. Who does he meet in this grand foyer of a hotel? Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And who remade Donald Trump, right? After he became a laughingstock and people knew him as a guy who was a bankrupt six times. Who remade him? NBC, The Apprentice.
Yeah.
And people forget that in The Apprentice, if you listen to the producers now when they talk about it, Trump Towers was such a dump that they brought in their team to spruce it up. So it's like literally, it's a perfect American presidency, right? It's celebrity, it's image, it's sensationalism, it's manufactured, it's a great story. And he literally won the presidency on this bullshit story that a man who had lost $1 billion. I mean, it takes so much talent to lose $100,000. He lost $1 billion and is in debt and didn't pay taxes and declared bankruptcy six times. This was the man who was going to master the art of the deal. It's kind of amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, something I've been thinking about lately a lot is you and I are both Muslim, and in our faith tradition, there's this tradition that says that people get the leaders that they deserve. And it's quite an indictment, but you're right. I mean, in so many ways, he is a very perfect American story, whether it comes to our love for reality shows and all the stuff. But okay, so now I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up in a few days, which is the election. We're in the last few days of this campaign. Did you watch the final debate, by the way? I feel like it was like months ago.
I'm a masochist and I watched all the debates. It was last week, right?
It was last week. I happened to be in the air. Literally, I got on the plane right as the debate started. And so I missed it. But the minute I landed, I watched the highlights. What did you think of it?
The bar has been lowered.
I know.
To the point where if Donald Trump doesn't diarrhea in his pants and vomit on stage, people say he's restrained, which is exactly what some of the commentary was. It's in a much more substantive and restrained debate. I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. The fact that, there has to be a mute button because we're dealing with children. This is what I said. He lost the debate in the first 25 minutes, just like Mike Pence, mm-hmm. because the first 25 minutes of all these debates were his opportunity to tell the American public that they should trust him and his leadership when it comes to a pandemic that has now killed 226,000 people. And he's the incumbent, so the burden is on him. And he was unable to make his case at every debate. And right after the 25-minute mark, after they moved on from COVID, I said Biden won. And I still stand by that. Because there is nothing that has been given that shows that this administration has the best interest of the American people, that they respect masks, that they respect science, that they'll do the right thing. If anything, it's the same bullshit, the same talking points. And I feel like he's like a one-hit wonder from 2016. I feel like he's running a 2016 campaign in 2020 because that's the only thing that he knows and it worked. And like he's attacking Hillary Clinton. They just like trolled her yesterday on her birthday.
Today, right now, an hour ago, he was at a rally and they're chanting lock her up. I mean, in October of 2020.
It's 2020, bro. Like I want someone to tell him like, hey, you're running against Joe Biden. But at the same time,
right.
I kind of don't want him, like I said before, what the studies have shown is that the more he just is himself and speaks like he speaks in front of his rallies, it is having a negative effect. So that's what I thought. I thought like him actually showing up to the debates hurt him, and all the polls showed that it hurt him. And all Joe Biden had to do was show some empathy, not fall asleep, say some words, look at the camera.
Joe Biden was never in any danger of falling asleep. That's his bullshit.
But you know what I mean? Just like, let's just look at the camera, be caring, show some leadership. And Joe Biden, to his credit, I give him props. He came in with the facts. He came in with plans. He articulated it. Done.
Yeah.
That's my take.
What you're saying about not just the rallies, the coronavirus, the issue of the pandemic is hurting Trump. But also, it's interesting, even on the economy, Biden is polling better. And right now, I mean, like, so we had some polls come out yesterday. I mean, in Wisconsin, Biden is leading Trump by 57% to 40%. That's even on when they break it down across different states on the different issues, Biden's actually polling better on the economy as well. He's ahead in Michigan.
That's huge, because that was the only card that Trump had.
He did. Trump, when he's faced with that question, the economy, he says, obviously, this is not my fault. It's the pandemic. It's China. It's the Wuhan flu. They ruined the best economy in the world. Did you watch the Leslie Stahl interview that we had heard about last week, but then we finally was aired this past Sunday when he gets up and leaves because Leslie Stahl wasn't having it. Every time he said we have the best economy in history, she's like, that's a lie. That's just actually not true.
I mean, he's just so weak, man. What a weak, pathetic. It's like perfect encapsulation of male fragility. She wasn't even that. She was just a reporter. She just asked him and he couldn't take it. And she's a woman. And he just broke down and he walked away.
He does seem to be getting more fragile to me, I have to say. Probably because he sees the end in sight. And before we end, I want to ask you how you think this is going to play out. But anyway, so these polls, what do you think of the polling, though? I mean, I know everybody's saying ignore the polls. We got to vote in the biggest numbers ever. And people are. People are. Man, voters are not playing. Over 70 million. I think like 76 million people.
Time I checked, it was 70. But if it's even more, it makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
We're breaking all the records for voter registration, early voting, absentee ballots. It's amazing.
People are terrified that their vote's not going to be counted. And also, I think people are just scared of four more years of this guy. And it is overwhelmingly more Democratic voters are showing up. That doesn't mean, obviously, it's Democratic votes, but, I mean, it's a good indication.
I mean, I know people are so traumatized. I talk to people every day, even people who covered the election. Mm-hmm. I will say this, and just to give us some hope, because I think people sometimes forget, Donald Trump only won by around 76,000 votes in three states. Mm-hmm. He lost the popular vote to Clinton by 3 million. Clinton is a woman, and there's misogyny that we still haven't talked about. And I could tell you, after having covered the election, Clinton was universally like loathed. Like, they hated her.
Right.
And so Biden isn't as hated as Clinton. Also, you had James Comey come out 11 days before with the huge, investigation. Then you had a lot of people who were so confident that Clinton was going to win based on the polls, they just didn't show up.
They didn't go.
None of that's happening now. None of it. Which is why I think the only way this guy wins is straight up naked, shameless theft.
Like, theft. He has to steal the election. Yeah.
Literally, he says, I'm stealing the election. And Kavanaugh's like, beer. He's stealing the election. Beer. And then Judge Barrett says, under his eye. Yes. Like, it has to be something that egregious. But even if you take away that 17 points that you said about Wisconsin, they're saying it's around like 9 to 8 points, but that's huge.
It is.
9 to 8 points, Wisconsin. We're looking at Michigan, 8-7 points. Pennsylvania, 5.
Texas is in play.
Texas. So right now, as we're speaking, a latest poll said Biden's up in Texas. Biden is up in Texas. Georgia, Florida, North Carolina. And let me put it this way. Suppose he loses Texas, Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Ohio, fine. If he just makes the Rust Belt blue again, I'm talking about Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and he takes Arizona, done.
Done, yeah. Yep, that's the path. I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, Trump it's interesting. He's, a couple weeks ago, there were reports that Trump is basically losing support among seniors. Now, this week, we're getting numbers that Trump is losing support across basically just white people in general. Go white people, finally. Including the non-college educated whites, which were kind of like his thing, because many of them actually favor restrictions. So he's losing them on the pandemic. He is not all of his race baiting, like you said. He's running the 2016 campaign. He has the same kind of race baiting shit. The, you know, suburban women, please love me, please vote for me, I saved the suburbs. The same old shit, and people are. It's just, it's not working this time.
You know what it is, though? It's suburban white women, especially the moms, who are really disgusted by his cruelty, his misogyny, his attacks on those children. But New York Times did a good, the Daily podcast, like just interviewed some of these women. Mm-hmm. And these white women in the suburbs, I think it was Ohio, they were saying that, you know, we didn't think about white privilege. We didn't think about racism. We heard about it, but we really didn't think about it. And there's something about seeing George Floyd getting choked to death for 8 minutes and 46 seconds and calling out to his mother and seeing the people come out and then seeing Donald Trump, instead of just trying to unify the country, just pouring gasoline and racism on it and failing to condemn white supremacy. And then you throw in the pandemic. It just becomes too much. And then you sit there and think about it. If Donald Trump wasn't such a freak, like if he wasn't such a psychopath, if he just simply acted like a president and said, mouthed the words, right? He just had to mouth the words and say, I condemn white supremacy. I love the blacks and the browns. This country's for everybody. Bye. Mm-hmm. That's all he had to say. He couldn't do it.
He can't do it. Yeah.
And even if they were smart, he would have pushed McConnell to pass the aid. That would have made him look good. And if he was smart during the pandemic, he could have led, just shown some concern. And it just shows you that
McConnell does not give a shit about Trump at this point. McConnell got his two Supreme Court justices and he's like, useful idiot, I'm done with you. He doesn't need him anymore. He really doesn't need him anymore.
He goes, I got my judges and I got, you know, like,
yeah. Speaking of which, what is happening to McConnell's body? Like, I keep seeing pictures of him, like every part of his body is turning blue or purple or something.
Well, it's because he's slowly transforming into the emperor before I... you know, like he's becoming Darth Sidious.
He is not well. Something's going on and he's not telling us.
Absolutely not well. But you know what, though? I think, and this is a strange, I know some people might think this is strange. In a weird way, the Republicans bum-rushing Judge Barrett is actually a long-term boon for this country because it reveals just how shameless and cynical and disgusting they are in their desire to subvert democracy for minority rule. And the fact that it did on the heel of Kavanaugh after the death of RBG and going against their own rules, it forces the quote-unquote moderate Democrats to finally play hardball, right? And now you're seeing a lot of moderate senators who never would have said this. Like, we're considering court packing.
Yeah.
Forced us to do it. And so it's like this Pyrrhic victory where I want Mitch McConnell to live a long, healthy life just to see his decades effort to destroy democracy being undone in the sense that he goes, I got the court packed. And then we're like, okay, well, we're going to expand the courts. He goes, oh my God, I wasted my life. And then, you know, the Democrats.
Very good, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, the Democrats take over. They expand the federal courts, right?
Of course. I mean, look, on the other hand, that is also a dangerous gambit because basically then it's this tit for tat. And then when you get a Republican Senate and president and they can expand the court further. I mean, like, I don't know.
It's a reform, right, Rabia? Like, yeah. What other way to...
There are many other reforms they could enact, including like term limits.
If you don't expand the courts, it finally forces the conversation out in the open where the majority says play hardball against these mother efforts and you have the majority backing, which then gives Biden and Harris the equity to actually flex. That's what's really important. And I think what's really interesting to me is that the Republican plan all these years was actually contingent upon the majority of people not giving an F. Like, they literally thought they could get away with
it. Or playing nice. You've said it a million times that, you know, Democrats go to a knife fight with, like, a stack of policy papers. I mean,
Excuse me, if you look at the Section 3, this is not fair. And McConnell's like, I'm going to shoot you in the head with my rifle.
So that's exactly right. Jesus. Okay, so you think we're going to play some hardball now. You think it's going to go there, and I hope it does.
But, you know, think about it, right? Because people are so pissed off. Look at these people who are waiting in line for hours. Look at the people who have buried folks on lockdown and haven't been able to literally see their loved ones. And then they see Mike Pence and Trump and Barrett, like, just literally without a mask, just chilling. Think about all the people who are losing their health care. And then you see Donald Trump and his buddies making money. There is a righteous rage. And I think that righteous rage of the majority will give Biden the flexibility. Because look, let me put it this way. If this was last year, I guarantee you, if they asked Biden and Harris, what about packing the court? He would have said, I will never do that. Now what does he say? I'm going to have a bipartisan. Can you tell me about reforms? That is something that is exciting. Yeah. That's DC talk for I'm entertaining it.
Right. Here's the thing. You know, people are enraged by this. People are going to be not just enraged, but also terrified, because very soon, I would say probably in the first quarter, I mean, I'm just predicting this, but I could be wrong. In the first quarter of 2021, we're going to see a challenge to Roe v. Wade. I mean, they've been waiting for this moment for a very long time. And I really think that will ignite people in a way, because I don't think that is as not as partisan an issue as people think it is. There are plenty of conservatives who support Roe v. Wade. There are plenty of women who are conservative women who understand the importance of having their reproductive rights protected. And I think when that gets, I mean, marriage equality, I don't know, but this, the Roe v. Wade, I think that's going to ignite something else in this country. And that challenge is definitely probably already being prepared. Now that Barrett's been.
It goes back to what I'm saying is all of this was predicated on the assumption that the majority will sit there and take it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you really think about it, because Republicans have been plotting this for decades, right? They're like, okay, we can't win over the majority.
Right. Gerrymandering, voter repression. Yep.
We have to create some originalist position that never existed. We have to do everything we can to rein in progress. We have to do everything we can to go back to 1953 before Brown versus Board of Education. What are we going to do? Judiciary. We'll hijack the judiciary. Okay, fine. You can do that, and they have done it. But what happens when the majority of the country says, I have lost faith in the judiciary and you do not represent me and I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're going to be. This is where the rubber hits the road, because you are absolutely correct that they already have cases waiting. And we know with Judge Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh, they're rubber stamps. They're going to do it. Yeah. How is this country going to respond?
I don't know. We'll see, but not well. I think they're going to respond by saying, yeah, it's time to reform the court. I think there's going to be, yeah, somehow. So I want to talk just about basically these last few days before the election. By the way, have you voted yet? I'm going to go vote tomorrow morning.
I dropped off the ballot. My wife did it 2 weeks ago.
On you guys.
I also want to tell people, here's an encouraging story. For those of you who think that, it doesn't make a difference, I don't care. My mother-in-law is a Pakistani woman, an immigrant from Pakistan who lives in Florida. She lives in Okeechobee, hard Trump county, right?
Mm-hmm.
She, like many of our, I think we could say many of our Desi aunties and uncles, kind of are apathetic. They just haven't voted ever. Yeah. And I said to her several months ago, you have to vote because Florida is a swing state. So she said, Beta, okay, I will. And then she did the research. I helped her. She registered. She voted. Then she is like the node of the Desi aunties of her community. They're all in like a WhatsApp group where they share gossip and like conspiracy theories and, you know, recipes. And she said, Beta, all of like my friends are saying Biden and Trump are the same. And they're saying, Kamala is like a Indian agent and this and that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But I kept feeding her information. I just spent a little bit of time with her. I said, this is what you say in response. This is how you have to do your part. And so fast forward a couple of months, she has single-handedly converted many of her friends who are registering for the first time and voting for Biden. And
high five, auntie. High five. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's awesome.
And the studies show, this came out last week, but you just have to have common sense, that when the mom of the household becomes, say, energized by a particular cause, she has a greater influence on the family and her husband than the other way around.
Yeah.
So these women who are literally, I think I've said this before on air. I said it twice on Cuomo's show. I said on Lemon show last year. And I said, if I'm wrong, I'll eat halal crow. And I'm saying it again on your podcast. I said, women will be the force that will sink Trump. And that's the women will be the force that will give a huge victory to the Democrats. If you're listening right now, do not give up on your family members and friends. Get them to vote.
Yeah.
And so I'm very hopeful with this week before the election. I think people are pissed off. I think people are scared. I think people have learned from the mistakes of 2016. And they're like, we are going to get this mother effer out. Not just him. We're going to get out these old dinosaur Republicans in the Senate. There's a very
oh, yeah.
We flipped the Senate.
Yeah. The Senate is, I mean, there are seats that you never thought would be in play that are in play. We've seen more of President Obama in the last week or two, as he finally kind of full on joins forces with Biden to go on the campaign trail. And this has been a pleasure and a joy to watch, because, I mean, Trump continues his crazy ass rallies and, you know, makes fun of Biden's pressers, and they're not even rallies because he keeps people socially distanced. He's got 50 people. He's doing it the right way. He's doing the safe way. And by the way, you must have seen last night what happened in Omaha, right? I mean, oh my God, the Trump rally in Omaha.
What a beautiful metaphor for the Trump campaign. Where did he just abandon his base to freeze?
He abandoned them. I mean, people were waiting like 2 or 2.5 hours before he got there. And what happened was, apparently they wouldn't let people park around the venue, so they had to park 3 or 4 miles away, take buses. They bussed them in, and then when Trump left, they didn't get out of there for 3.5 hours because for some reason the buses couldn't get back on there. I don't know what exactly happened. It was freezing temperatures. 7 people were hospitalized. People were stranded. We're talking about no food, no water, no bathrooms, and it's freezing.
Anyway. I mean, you know, thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. Anyway, back to Obama. So yeah, Obama has been loving, apparently. It's been reported that he told a friend after he appeared in Philadelphia last week that it felt so good to like rib Trump. And that's what he's been doing, making Trump crazy. So I wanted folks to check out this clip.
Now, I've sat in the Oval Office with both of the men who are running for president. And just in case you couldn't tell, they're very different people. I didn't think that Donald Trump would embrace my vision or my policies, but I did hope for the country's sake that he might show some interest in taking the job seriously. But he didn't. He hasn't shown any interest in doing the work or helping anybody but himself and his friends, or treating the presidency as anything more than a reality show that can give him the attention that he craves, and he does crave attention. This week, with all everything that's happening, you know what he brought up? He was fussing about the crowd size at the inauguration again, saying his was bigger. Who is thinking about that right now? Nobody except him. But the rest of us have had to live with the consequences. More than 225,000 people in this country are dead. More than 100,000 small businesses have closed. 500,000 jobs are gone in Florida alone. Think about that. And what's his closing argument? That people are too focused on COVID. He said this at one of his rallies. COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage. If he had been focused on COVID from the beginning, cases wouldn't be reaching new record highs across the country this week. If we were focused on COVID now, the White House wouldn't be having its second outbreak in a month. The White House. Let me say this. I lived in the White House for a while. You know, it's a controlled environment. You can take some preventive measures in the White House to avoid getting sick. Except this guy can't seem to do it. He's turned the White House into a hot zone.
Good for Obama. He has, you know what? We forget this. I haven't forgotten. I keep the receipts. But they humiliated Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was the one, like, go back early, you know, promoting, being one of the lead promoters of the insanely racist and hateful birther conspiracy. The New York Post showed Obama as a dead monkey being shot by cops. They forced Barack Obama, the first black president, to show his birth certificate. Imagine how humiliating. We haven't even gotten Trump's freaking taxes, but Obama had to show his birth certificate. And as we know, as people of color, you're a woman of color and a Muslim and a hijabi, the rules are different. We can't be like white dudes and just tell it like it is. We always have to smile. And we have to be funny and witty.
We have to have our receipts in order.
Yeah, we can't make a mistake. And Barack Obama, as a black man, could never show anger, because if he showed anger, then white people would freak out even more. And so to finally see him rip with a smile on his face like Bugs Bunny, he's earned it.
He's earned it. Well, what, 6 more days till the election? By the time we come back a week from now, I don't know, a lot could change. But it's not looking good for Trump. Is it fair to say that it's not looking good right now?
It's looking very bad. No, the fact that he is underwater in the states that he won, the fact that seniors are turned on him, the fact that there's Republicans against Trump, the fact that he has his own, like, you know, Mattis and Kelly and others on the DL, or, you know, in some on the record comments are turning from him, the fact that he's run out of money, the fact that Brad Parscale and all these other people are either indicted or going to be indicted, or some people are in jail. It's the shit show. And so I'm waiting for Orange Julius Caesar. I think it's going to play out in 2 weeks. They're going to start stabbing each other.
Speaking of which, we actually didn't talk about this because it was such a non-event, like anticlimactic when it happened. Anonymous just revealed themselves today, right?
Miles Taylor.
Can we talk about that?
Former DHS official Miles Taylor.
Honestly, when I saw that tweet, I was like, wait, who's that? I forgot about it. I totally forgot. He was an advisor to Kirstjen Nielsen, right? DHS.
That's right. He's the one. So for those of you guys who have forgotten, Miles Taylor, in 2018, there was a famous New York Times op-ed written by Anonymous talking about the resistance within the administration. And then that same individual wrote a book, which became a bestseller. And everyone said, okay, great. Why isn't Anonymous now kind of come out and reveal himself or herself? And then Miles Taylor, a couple of months ago, did this ad, right? Republicans against Trump. He did that video. And then afterwards, Miles Taylor got a CNN gig. So the guy who literally helped spearhead the child separation policy, which we just recently learned, 535 kids have been kidnapped by the government, essentially, and have forever lost their families. He got a book deal. He got his reputation rehabilitated, and he's getting paid by CNN. But he's the hero, apparently.
Well, I mean, he issued a 3-page statement today. I didn't read the whole thing, but, you know, his argument is that, look, I tried to be one of those people, part of the resistance, that was going to be a firewall and try to prevent some of the worst things happening. We were there to try to push back and basically kind of like sabotage this administration's, some of their attempts at what they were trying to achieve. And here's the thing. I think there's a value to people who do that. I remember when Trump was first inaugurated, and you and I both know we have lots of friends and acquaintances who are in government. I was actually like, you know, people shouldn't leave. People shouldn't flee. We need to keep some institutional integrity. We still need people on the ground who are experts, who've been there for years, and they can hold down the fort until this guy's gone. So I kind of am on the fence about this guy.
You know, okay, so let me put it this way. I talked to someone in national security who, right after Trump was elected, who, young woman, early to mid-20s, died in the wool Republican, who couldn't believe that Trump was elected. But she told me, off the record, that if I leave, the people who replace me are extremists.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck. Do I stay and resist, or do I not? But then it comes to a point where you have to make a decision. I think you and me, all of us listening, right? If we realize that we're actually not acting as a barrier, right?
It's but instead, not working.
Yeah, instead we're being complicit and enabling, and we're profiting off that enabling, which he did. Mm-hmm. And it'd be one thing if it was just his campaign, right? Or this campaign of like idiocy and corruption. But I think you and I agree, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, one of the most egregious sins that will taint this administration and this country is this treatment of those kids that we have forgotten.
Oh, the family separation. Absolutely. Right. Those are crimes against humanity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Rod Rosenstein, we saw that he didn't give a shit. Remember that? That we just forgot that 2 weeks ago, it was came out that he knew it. He didn't care.
Yeah.
They knew about it. They didn't care. They went ahead with it. They supported it. They stood next to him as they literally separated kids from their parents and locked them up. And now we've realized that some of those kids will never be reunited with their family. That's 535 kids permanently orphaned and damaged for life. And when I hear that, I get this righteous rage. And maybe it's just me.
No. The rage is shared. I do wonder why he stayed anonymous. He had already resigned. I mean, so I don't know why he stayed anonymous. Like, what was the point of that?
I think he was hedging his bets. Look, No, I'm serious. Because look, what people don't realize about DC and specifically the conservative ecosystem is that it's a very tight ecosystem.
You
right?
can't burn all the bridges, right?
Yeah, everyone, this is their community. This is their tribe. They know these people. They go to church with them. They go golfing with them. If you get out of government, you're going to seek a private job where some conservative friend of yours is going to give you a private. So it's not just your career. It's also your money and also your social tribe. So right. Once you break, you make a permanent break, right? I'm not giving excuses, but I'm just kind of explaining to you.
No, that's good. That's good to explain. Like this.
I mean, that's how it was in the green room in CNN. Mm. So many of the quote unquote pro-Trump supporters hated that guy. How do I know? They told me. And I said, why are you going on air? And they're like, eh.
Please, I need you to write that tell-all, which I had, you know, just out
I'm writing it. I'm on my last chapter. So,
are they going to be in it?
I don't know. I named some people. I didn't name a lot because it's not going to be one of those gotcha things. But I do explain how these things work. I share that.
For those of the listeners who don't know what we're talking about, Wajahat is working on his memoir. And so, just tell us a little bit about it before we wrap up.
It's called Go Back to Where You Came From and Other Helpful Recommendations on How to Be American.
I love it.
Yeah, it's signed by Norton. I'm on the last chapter. I made a vow to myself that I would finish the draft before my 40th birthday. I've been writing nonstop for about 2.5 months. It'll hopefully be done in 2 days, and hopefully it'll be out September, October of 2021. And it's a mixture of not just a memoir, but it's about the last 20 years, I would say, after 9/11. In America, and trying to connect the dots using my personal story. I hope it's funny. I hope it's helpful. I hope it infuriates you for the right reasons.
It's going to be fantastic. I cannot wait. And I can't believe that you are on your last chapter. Congratulations. That's amazing. When is your 40th birthday?
November 1st.
Oh, damn. No way. It's next week. All right. Well, congratulations for
officially
making your goal.
Old man.
You can't say that to somebody who's older than you are. It doesn't work like that, man. You just destroyed me. But it's okay. It's okay. All right.
I said all this because we have to get Rabia to finish her gin podcast and finish her book.
My podcast has one more episode. Season's over. It has drained me, but it's been fun. And yeah, my book will get written. I work well under pressure. I'm actually waiting till after the election, and then I'm going to write my butt off. I kind of can't think about this until after the election. So once that's done, I will proceed. Wajahat, thank you so much for joining us on this very important episode. It is always so much fun to talk to you. And I hope you never have to come on the show again because we have a 46th president of the United States.
I hope this is the last episode of the 45th.
Not the very last, but the last one with you on maybe. But anyhow, so
I look forward to joining you guys for the 46th podcast.
It'll just be you and Susan. I'm out. Okay. Well, thanks again. And thank you guys for listening. I just want to close out this week with a clip that the Lincoln Project, which people are know that the group of Republicans who are against Trump, tweeted out the other day. And it's basically a compilation of Fox News anchors who are finally seeing the darkness at the end of the tunnel. So just to lift your spirits a little bit. So enjoy this clip and have a great week and stay safe and healthy.
You look at our polls, and we chose basically Joe Biden with a bigger lead in Michigan than we had before. I'm going to put up the first poll, and that has the list of the, there you have on the screen, the battleground states.
Joe Biden is doing better on the issue of the economy than Democrats typically do in a presidential race.
But I'm saying, why isn't he talking about the virus? Why isn't he talking about the economy? Why even the rallies? People say, you know what? I don't think the rallies are so great. They're super spreader events.
Suburban women, would you please like me?
If he's talking about all these superfluous issues, he is squandering time. He's already at a disadvantage compared to where he normally should be, where a normal Republican president should be on this issue. But it's getting worse by the fact that he's out there talking about all this other stuff.
I get home, I turn on the television. They talked about your floods in Iowa. They talked about how's Iowa doing the crops? How's this happening? How are they doing in Florida? How the 3-4 stories, one after another. Where's my Nobel Peace Prize? They don't talk about it.
I am nervous, you know, because I think the only real poll is election day. But I must say that among political people who I chat up, there's this thought that, what is Trump doing? Why is he doing what he's doing? I mean, people say he's attacking Fauci, who's very popular. He's attacking the debate moderator. He's attacking the debate topics. He says he doesn't like the debate topics. Then it's not only that. Then he goes after Hunter Biden. None of this, it seems, is going to move the needle or says to people, this is really important to me and my family.
One of the things that we've seen is that seniors have softened on Trump, especially when it comes to COVID.
I learned so much about coronavirus. And one thing that's for certain, don't let it dominate you.
This thing is a killer if it gets you. If you're the wrong person, you don't have a chance.
Florida, obviously critical to his reelection hopes. He can't really win the White House again if he doesn't win Florida.
He outperformed past GOP candidates in that county. So to have the president spending more time there today is interesting.
Nobody won.
Well, we've had special counsel. We've had impeachment. We've had a pandemic. We've had riots. We'd have trade wars, border crisis, Kavanaugh. There's got to be a group of Americans that might just say, you know what? I just might want to be bored.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.